Hi everyone, my name's Amy, for those of you who don't know me, and I'm really looking forward to getting into the next bit of Mark with you here today. We've been working through Mark's Gospel, and today we're going to look at the next section of that. But before we start, there's two things you need to know about me. Firstly, as a child, I was quite a quiet child. I spent a lot of time hiding behind my mum's legs, not putting my hand up in the classroom, just dreading sort of having to speak to people. And so what I did was I wrote a lot of poems. That's sort of how I processed what was going on around me. I wrote them about all sorts of things. I loved sort of writing poems. And the second thing you need to know about me is when we went on a bike ride as a family, like many children, I would moan quite a lot about the fact I had to wear a helmet. I hated wearing a helmet on a bike. And my mum would really patiently reason with me and tell me about the dangers of not wearing a helmet until I sort of begrudgingly put it on. And then off we'd go on our bike ride. That's me as a sort of 7-year-old, 8-year-old. Fast forward a few years, Rory and I have just got married, and we're going through sort of all my childhood possessions, and Rory finds a book of my poems, which he is looking through and really enjoying, until he finds one that makes him laugh out loud straight away at the title. And the title of the poem was Kiss My Life Goodbye, which 7 to 8-year-old Amy had written a poem about the importance of road safety and bicycle helmet wearing, entitled Kiss My Life Goodbye. That's what I'd written. Now, the question I'm sure you're all wondering is, what happened to the little girl who moaned about wearing her helmet? And where did this slightly morbid, helmet-obsessed author appear from? Now, it wasn't that one day I just took my mum's warnings much more seriously. It wasn't that one day I just decided, oh, I'm gonna listen to mum now and I'm gonna believe that wearing my helmet is the best thing. No, it was when a little girl in the year below me at school fell off her bike and ended up in hospital. Suddenly, I saw the importance of helmet safety far more clearly than I'd ever seen it before. Suddenly, I took it more seriously and it mattered more personally to me. It wasn't that I didn't know before that riding a bike without a helmet could be dangerous. My mum had made that very clear. But suddenly, after Flo fell off her bike, I saw something I'd known for a long time in a much different light. And the passage we're looking at today is about that realization moment. If you've been with us over the last few weeks, you'll have noticed how Mark has been obsessed with asking this question of who is Jesus? As he's written his account of Jesus' life, he's been asking the question over and over again, who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? And over the last few weeks, Mark has shown us story upon story of Jesus in different situations. He showed us Jesus encountering things that we just feel utterly powerless against. And again, shown us that Jesus is bigger. He's shown us that Jesus is bigger than nature, demons, mental health, physical health, even death. But Mark hasn't stopped there. He's gone on to show us how Jesus is the promised Messiah, how he is the one who fulfills the Old Testament prophecies and promises. He's shown us again and again how Jesus can only be God. If Mark was a lawyer, this would be him be presenting his case, building his evidence, saying, look, this is who Jesus is. And yet through all of this time, the disciples, the people who are there with Jesus in all these miracles and teaching moments, tend to just be constantly terrified or amazed. They're either terrified or they're amazed. They just don't seem to see who Jesus is. They don't grasp it yet. And Jesus ended last week's story saying, do you still not understand? Don't you get it yet? You've seen me calm the storm, feed 5,000, walk on water. You've heard me teach and fulfill Old Testament prophecies. Do you still not understand? Jesus is asking them, do you see me yet? Do they, after everything they have seen, still not see who he is? Jesus is asking, when you look at me, who do you see? And as Jesus asks his disciples this question, Mark tells us a story of a blind man who for the first time starts to see something. So let's read it together. I'll read it for us. It's on page 1011, and the Bible's on the tables. Do open it up, read it along with me. I'll read that now. It were Mark 8, verse 22. It's at the bottom. They came to Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spit on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and said, "I see people. They look like trees walking around." Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened and his sight was restored. He saw everything clearly. Jesus sent him home saying, "Don't even go into the village." Jesus and the disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. And on the way, he asked them, "Who do people say I am?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, and still others one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Peter answered, "You are the Messiah." Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. This story is a story about changing sight. And it starts with a really physical change in sight. Just imagine for a second that you're blind. Imagine you can't see anything, that darkness is all you've got. I've been struck as I've been thinking about this. I just can't comprehend that. I can't imagine it at all. There's a blind guy dancing on Strictly this year. It just blows my mind every week. Like, how does he learn the dances? Like, how does he learn the steps? How does he not fall off the floor? How does he, like, re-find his partner? Like, I can't understand it. I rely on sight so much. It's incomprehensible to me. And the man in our story, he's been living in this darkness. It's totally dark. There's nothing to see. And then he meets Jesus. And everything changes. Light comes in and suddenly he starts to see something. Suddenly the world has a map. He could walk from A to B and not need someone to guide him. Suddenly there's something there. There's light. There's something he can see. But when Jesus asked him if he sees anything, it's really clear that the man's vision isn't fully restored. He can see something, but not everything. People look like trees. Something's not quite right. So what's going on? This is the only partial healing that we see in any of the accounts of Jesus' life. So it's good for us to ask the question, why? Did Jesus make a mistake? Like, is that what's happening? Well, seems as in the last two chapters alone, Jesus has fed 5,000 people, walked on water, healed a little girl from an impure spirit, healed a man who was deaf and mute, and then fed 4,000 people. I think it's fair for us to assume that this isn't some kind of mistake. It's not some blunder. Jesus didn't run out of power. He wasn't just having a bad day. He could have easily restored this man's sight fully the first time. So why didn't he? Jesus is trying to communicate something here more than just a miracle, more than just a healing. We've already seen in Mark how Jesus is using miracles as teaching moments. As he feeds 5,000 people, he wants the disciples to understand that he is the God who can create bread out of nowhere and feed and provide for his people, just like God did in the Old Testament. When Jesus heals the woman who's been bleeding, he stops, he talks to her, he shows everyone the power and importance of faith. As he walks on water, he tells the disciples that he is the same God who parted the Red Sea. Jesus uses miracles as moments to show us something of what God is like. This is not a failed miracle, but it's pointing to something more. Through physically healing, Jesus is showing us the journey the disciples are going on, how they are beginning to see. Because this is the moment. Everything Mark has written so far has all been building up to this moment. Story after story been layered on top of each other, and Mark has been asking the same question, who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? And here Jesus finally asks the question himself. But what about you? Who do you say I am? And suddenly, Peter's in the hot seat. This is the question it's all been about. This is the question that changes everything. This is the question that people have spent hundreds of years waiting for an answer to. We've seen Mark ask this question for 8 chapters, but this question is so much more than that. It's the question people have been waiting for hundreds of years. For hundreds of years, people have been waiting, prophesying, hoping, dreaming, longing for the Messiah, for God's promised king. And when put on the spot, when asked directly, Peter speaks the words they've all been waiting to hear. You are the Messiah. Who is Jesus? He's the Messiah. And that word was loaded for Jews. They had been waiting for a Messiah for hundreds of years. Messiah literally means promised one. And through all of the Old Testament, the Messiah had been promised. And the promises had been big. The Messiah is the one who would crush Satan. The Messiah is the one who would bring redemption. The Messiah is the one who will bear our sin and suffer in our place. The Messiah is the one who will defeat death. The Messiah is the one who will fulfill God's rescue plan. The Messiah is the one who will finally save God's people. Peter's words are loaded. He's declaring Jesus to be the one they've all been waiting for. The one who'll change everything. But at this point, where we are right now in the story, there's still a question hanging in the air for Peter. What sort of Messiah will Jesus be? He's just given Jesus the title of all titles. But what will it mean? What will Jesus do? And that is the question that Mark is going to go on to answer in the second half of his book. But before we get there, let me just take you back to the blind man. Let me take you back to that man who's starting to see people, but they're looking a bit like trees. Because that blind man is showing us what's going on with Peter. We've just seen this moment with Peter where the darkness is lifted, where the light begins to slowly stream in, where his eyes are opened. Compared to darkness, this is just amazing for Peter. For Peter to declare that Jesus is the Messiah is him starting to see finally, this is who Jesus is. He's grasping something of who Jesus is, of the person in front of him. But he's still seeing people walking around like trees. It isn't full sight yet. He's not totally understood everything that Jesus has come to do or how Jesus will be that Messiah. Seeing people walking around looking like trees is amazing, but it isn't full sight. It's not where you want the story to end. But it's so much better than blindness. It's so much better than not seeing who Jesus is at all. Through partially healing this man, Jesus is showing us what's going on with Peter. He's showing us that Peter started to see. And he's showing us that it's possible for someone to see something of who he is, but not everything. Jesus has seen something of, Peter has seen something of who Jesus is, but he's still missing something. And Jesus uses this man's physical sight to show us what Peter's spiritual sight is like. Just like how as a child, I always knew I should wear a helmet. But once I saw someone got hurt, I saw it in a different light. It had a different importance to me. I already had the information. I just saw it far more clearly. How we see things changes. The blind man in the story is an illustration of what's going on as the disciples are starting to see. Jesus is showing us that it's possible for people to see him, talk to him, walk with him, see miracles, and still not see things quite clearly. Still possible to miss who he really is or what he's come to do. I'm guessing most of us in this room have had that moment where you've missed someone's identity. You've either chatted to them with the wrong name, or you've thought you were talking to someone else, and as you're talking, you've sort of had that moment where you're like, oh, this is a bit awkward that you're not who I thought you were. There's a sort of famous story about this in the Snow household where Rory, my husband, was, before we got married, travelling to and from Denmark for work. And on one of the times he was away, I received a text saying, I'm in the airport and I've seen Michael Hall. Now, if you If you don't know who Michael is, he's one of the leaders here at Grace Church. He's out doing kids, so you'll have to try and see if you can find him for his description later. But on that day, I'd seen Michael. He'd been at church. I'd gone to his house to tea. I knew Michael just couldn't be in this airport. So we had a bit of back and forth, and I was just explaining, this can't be Michael Hall. It just can't be. And finally, Rory concedes. He says, oh, this isn't Michael Hall. But this man, and this is a quote, is the splitting image of Michael Hall. That's how he says, this guy's the splitting image of Michael Hall. And then a new message comes in, but he's Chinese. Then a new message comes in, he's got a brand new tattoo on his shoulder. And another message, he's wearing a vest. And the final message is, he's not wearing any glasses. Now, I don't know how you can see someone of a different nationality, covered in tattoos, wearing a vest and not wearing glasses and still think it looks like Michael. Like, if Michael walked in right now wearing a vest and not wearing glasses, I'm not sure I'd even notice it was Michael. Like, it just feels so different from how I see Michael. I remember thinking, Rory and I see Michael very differently. Like, this isn't how I see him at all. And despite all this, to this day, Rory will defend that this man looked exactly like Michael Hall. Now, mistaking Michael Hall's identity, this guy Michael Hall's identity, had zero negative implication for it until potentially this moment. But it didn't matter at all. It's a funny story. But Mark slows down here, and Jesus slows down here, and he asks this question because mistaking Jesus' identity is a much bigger deal. Jesus, in this story, really focuses in on, who do people say I am? Before you read any further in Mark's gospel, Mark wants you to come face to face with this question. Who is Jesus? Is Jesus the one you have been waiting for? Mark doesn't want us to miss this. He doesn't want us to skip over Jesus' identity because it matters. If you're someone here today who doesn't know how you would answer that question, if you're not sure what you think of Jesus, this is the moment where Mark is pausing to ask you, given what you've seen so far, who do you think Jesus is? This is a question that's important to answer because it changes everything. And it seems to me that it's possible for us to see Jesus and just to miss who he is. There's been a few moments in my life where I've really found that myself noticing that. I've read Uncover, which is a sort of evangelistic Bible study with a range of people. And each week there's sort of a story from a gospel, from an account of Jesus' life, and there's some questions. And I always used to start by saying, tell me, like, as we chat through it, just there's no wrong answers, tell me whatever you think is happening. And through time, I had to change the way I said that a little bit because although there are some questions that are like personal, which there are no wrong answers to at all, there are some questions that are a bit more comprehensive where I found myself sort of having to disagree with what people were saying. The most memorable time was when I was a student and I was reading the story of the paralyzed man. And the story is that the paralyzed man is lowered through a roof by his friends to get to Jesus because they want Jesus to heal him. And the question that the book asks is, what do you think people in the room might have been feeling? So Jesus, the homeowner, the crowd, the man on the mat, the friends on the roof, how do you think people might be feeling? And the answer I was given was, I think they're feeling scared. And I sort of thought, oh yeah, I think that's fair. Like, the roof's coming in, that seems a bit scary. And then the second half of the sentence was, I think they're feeling scared because Jesus is obviously an assassin. And at that point, I was just a bit speechless because in the story, the man comes through the roof, Jesus forgives him, heals him, he goes away walking and praising God. Like, that's the story. And I just didn't see how you could read that story and say, I think Jesus is an assassin. I just didn't understand it. And it's quite an extreme example, but there's been lots of times where I've read stories of Jesus' life, and I've just, with the person I'm reading it with, thought, oh, I'm not sure you've seen who Jesus is. It's possible for us to see Jesus and for him to look distorted, like people walking around like trees. But Jesus doesn't leave the blind man there, and he doesn't want to leave us there either. I think there's a warning for us in this passage. I think Jesus is showing us that it's possible to see him, even to follow him, and to miss who he really is and what he came to do. But that is never the end point. Jesus doesn't want to leave the blind man seeing people who look like trees. No, he heals him fully. He wants to see him clearly. Now, don't get me wrong. I think we want to celebrate partial sight. When people start to see something of who Jesus is, that's amazing. Light is so much better than darkness. But it's important we see that as a beginning, not as an end. If you're someone here who doesn't follow Jesus, we want you to see something of who he is. We want you to have a moment where you think, oh, wow, I think Jesus is really loving, or I think Jesus is really sacrificial, or I think Jesus is really kind. We want you to start to grapple with who you think he is. But we don't want you to end there. We want you to come to see Jesus as he fully is, as he truly is, as he says he is. We don't want you to miss who Jesus really is. If at any point we think we can decide what Jesus is like, then I think there's another step to go. Because the people are still looking a bit like trees. Jesus wants to show us what he's really like, the kind of the Messiah he will be, and the rescue mission he is on. And that's where Mark goes next. That's where the rest of his book is spent. What kind of Messiah will Jesus be? What kind of rescue mission is he on? If you've not read that, or if you've not read it in a while, let me just encourage you to take half an hour this week and read that. Read the kind of Messiah that Jesus is going to be. See what Jesus says about himself. Because if we're really honest, in many ways, this story can feel like the anticlimactic climax to us. Mark has spent 8 chapters building to this moment. And Peter says these words, and they're earth-shattering, like mind-blowing, for the people who've been waiting for the Messiah. But that's not us. We aren't waiting for a Messiah. We haven't spent years wondering, hoping, dreaming of God sending his rescuer. So where does it leave us? Well, this story only really matters if you need a Messiah. And I want to put it to you here today that whoever you are, you need a Messiah. I don't think I should have to work that hard, because we all have those moments where we come face to face with something bigger than us, harder than us, out of our control, and we just think, oh, I don't know how to do this. We all have those moments where we're fighting with the things inside us. And we think, I need someone bigger than me. When you're faced with your sin, or to put it another way, when you mess up again, when you have that gnawing sense of guilt and shame inside you, what do you need? You need a Messiah. You need someone who says, bring me your worst, and I know it'll be forgiven. You need a Messiah who will take your sin, who will suffer in your place. When the worst happens, when you're plunged into darkness, when suffering just feels unmanageable, when the depths of despair rise up, when sickness, pain, or death, or whatever it is, come knocking at the door, and it's easy to just feel totally alone, what do you need? You need a Messiah. You need someone who will walk through the darkest places and never leave you. When you feel the anxieties of life and the worries rise up all around you and surround you, when you come face to face with all the things that are just too big and too much, that are out of your control, when worry after worry fills your mind, what do you need? You need a Messiah. You need someone who can say, don't worry, I've got this. You need someone who can calm the storm, that as you see the things you can do nothing about, says, don't worry, I'm bigger. When you face evil, either from within your own heart or when everything outside just feels against you, what do you need? You need a Messiah. You need someone who will crush all the evil in the world. And finally, when you face your own death, when you know your days are drawing in and life suddenly feels fleeting, what do you need? You need a Messiah. You need someone who promises life,
who has gone before you and defeated death's power. You need someone who promises life, but not just promises it, but has shown he's bigger than death. Whoever you are sitting here today, whether you follow Jesus for a long time or whether you don't know him at all, you need a Messiah. You need someone to handle the things you can't. We all have that moment, right, where we just recognize our own smallness, our own inabilities, whether it's to fight the battles inside ourselves, whether it's to navigate life in the world around us. We need a Messiah. And so I guess the question is Jesus that Messiah? Will you take those things to him? When faced with your own sin, will you sit in guilt and despair? Or will you take it to Jesus, the one who took the punishment of your sin so you can be forgiven? When you're crippled with anxiety, will you put up with the relentless thoughts and the sleepless nights? Will you take it to Jesus, the one who is bigger than even your biggest worries? When you're in the depths of suffering, will you let isolation take over? Or will you turn to Jesus, the one who has suffered for you and who promises to stay with you in the suffering? And finally, when you face your own death, will you try and handle it on your own, or will you run to Jesus, the one who defeated death, rose again, so that we can know life and life with him to the full? Just like Peter, we all need a Messiah. And right now, Jesus is inviting each one of us to go to him and know him as Messiah, be it for the first time or for the 100th. Let us go to Jesus. Let's know him as he truly is, the Messiah, God's promised one who came to save. Let me pray for us. Father, I thank you that as you saw the brokenness of the world, as you saw how things just went totally wrong when we tried to do life without you, you didn't give up on us. He didn't turn away from us. You promised your rescuer. You promised a Messiah. You promised that one day someone would come and who would face all the things we can't. I thank you that you sent Jesus, that Jesus came, and that he is the Messiah, the promised one who came to save. Thank you that nothing is too big for Jesus. Even the biggest thing, even our sin that separates us from you, is not too big for him, that it is dealt with, that it is sorted. I thank you for the kind of rescue mission Jesus was on, that he came so that we could know you, and that he died in our place so that we can be forgiven. And Father, I pray that we would come to you, that we would come and we would know Jesus as our Messiah. And that we would experience the freedom and the joy and the grace and the love there is to be found there. I pray for us that we wouldn't miss who you are, Jesus. Help us see you clearly. Help us keep returning to you time and time again, to keep seeing you, to keep knowing you and looking to you, see who you truly are, who you say you are, and that we would get to enjoy you and your beauty, not some shadow of you that we distort in our minds. Amen.